From what I can understand, here in Tuaca, you had a very Krishna conscious weekend.
Yes.
At least those that came to participate in the nice Krishna Katha, Hari Katha opportunities. What a great festival season. Balaram Jayanti, Krishna Janmashtami, Radhastami, Kadasi, oops, Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja, Vamana Dwadasi, today, tomorrow is Bhakti Vinod Thakur's appearance day. It's almost like Jiva Goswami. And Vamana Dwadasi. So, what should we do? Should we take one of them, or all of them, or some of them? I was thinking, I didn't know what Jiva Goswami's appearance day. We have to say something about Jiva Goswami. Well, I was thinking to begin by giving you a surprise quiz. Pull out a piece of paper. No. Quiz question. Two quiz questions. According to our scriptures and the teachings that Srila Prabhupada has given us, there are conditioned souls and there are liberated souls. Nityasiddha, Nityabaddha. Of those who are liberated souls, how many categories of liberated souls are there? There are three primary categories of liberated souls. What are those three primary categories of liberated souls? Who would like to volunteer the answer to that question? Okay. Did you hear? Nitya Siddha, eternally liberated. Sadhana Siddha, they became perfect through sadhana. And Kripa Siddha, they became perfect just by mercy. Next question. What are examples of each of those three categories of perfected, liberated souls? We'll make the first part easy. Give one example of the Nitya Siddha Bhakta.
Radharani.
Radharani. Hey, all right. Radharani. Sadhana Siddha. Who became perfected through the performance of sadhana? Huh?
Dhruva Maharaj.
Excellent. Because he's in the Bhagavatam, the prime example of being a mixed devotee, having really strong material desire, and oh, by the way, Lord Vishnu can help me get that desire, all right, I've become a bhakta. Karma Mishra Bhakta. I want a kingdom. I want a big kingdom. Good. Any other examples? Maybe you don't need more examples, because those of you that have read the biography of Bhaktivinoda Thakur know that in his maturing, in his biography of his life, there's biographies about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but he is a unique person in his literary contributions. He wrote his own biography. It's called an autobiography, but he did it in a very unique way. It was in the form of a letter to one of his sons. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was one of his sons, and his name was Bhimala Prasad. But he had another son named Lalit Prasad. So in a letter to Lalit Prasad, he describes his own life. Very, very, very detailed. And in those details of his life, it was not until he was in his 30s, my memory serves me right, it's around 34 or 35, before he came in contact with Chaitanya Charitamrita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Because it's not like today, we're mercies of, or examples of Srila Prabhupada's mercy, Prabhupada Kripa, because we have so easily accessible, maybe too easily accessible, because we don't take it seriously. But to get a copy of Srimad Bhagavatam, you just walk around the corner and tell the person in the gift shop, I'd like what Srimad Bhagavatam said, and probably hand it to you right there. Or if not, I'll have it to you in a week, or just go to Krishna.com, click, 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 put in your credit card information, click, and they'll send it to your door. The whole entire Srimad Bhagavatam. Just have to have a credit card. Pay your bills. It wasn't like that during Bhaktivinoda Thakur's time. He had heard of Srimad Bhagavatam, but he didn't have a copy of Srimad Bhagavatam, and one friend of a friend had a friend who had Srimad Bhagavatam set, so he went to visit that friend and he gifted the Srimad Bhagavatam to him, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur described. He read it avariciously. I mean, just non-stop. And then he read it again. He was so moved, he began reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he read it several times, and his whole life changed. At least in the form of his lila, he went from a conditioned soul to a perfected soul. And the end of his life, besides his writings expressing his realization, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, although the father of 10 children, some of you have one child, two children, maybe three children, 10 children? 10 children? And a high court judge with all the social obligations and, you know, career obligations, become a perfected soul. I mean, at the end of his life, he entered Nirjan Bhajan. He entered a small little room and didn't come out. Just performed devotional service, chanted all day long for months and months and months. It wasn't like, you know, hardship. It was, he was in trance. He was in ecstasy. He was highly evolved spiritual personality. When the biography of Srila Prabhupada's life was being written, this is an inside story. The inside story is there are persons who saw Srila Prabhupada as a Nityasiddha devotee who has come, descended to this world to show by example how a conditioned soul can become perfected. There was a group of people that felt like that. And as the requested, designated author of Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, Satsri Maharaj, he took a different approach, and there were persons who felt it's equally glorious to say that Srila Prabhupada walked amongst us. He received the mercy of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and his life became perfect. So, an example of a sadhana siddha, as opposed to a nityasiddha who descended, acted like he was one of us, and then exhibited stages and steps of, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is like that. Not to speak of nityasiddha, he's the Supreme Lord. But he performed pastimes as if he was a wrangling scholar, like a puffed up, debating student that would challenge everybody and anything and anyone about anything at any time and all the time. So he didn't exhibit his lila as the greatest of all devotees of the Lord, as was his lila. Clearly that's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's position. So there were devotees, and many of you weren't around at the time, but it was like, you know, hey, what's going on? Hey, what's going on? You know, one of those things. And, you know, the Lilamrita portrays Srila Prabhupada as a sadhana siddha. Bhaktivinoda Thakur portrays himself as a sadhana siddha. And indeed, the end of his life was perfection. Both Jiva Goswami and Bhaktivinoda Thakur were extremely prolific. Anybody ever tried to write a book? Maybe you went to college and had to write papers. Or maybe you had a master's or PhD thesis and you had to write something that like took several years. But even writing a paper, like even writing a Vyasa Puja homage, how long does it take to write a Vyasa Puja homage? Those of you that have sat down to do it, it takes a while. Write a book. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote over 100 books. Swallow that one, bro, and I ingest that one and see what happens. Plus 10 children, plus high court judge, and all of the obligations that go with being a civil servant. And his preaching mission, Namahatta preaching mission, and writing songs. And incredible. One of the ways that Bhaktisiddhanta Bhaktivinoda Thakur did it is he did the same, he maintained very much a similar schedule, say either way. Srila Prabhupada maintained a schedule very similar to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's. He just slept very little. When weary, he was writing books. He slept very little and wrote for hours every night, and was abundantly inspired, and would write, and he would write books in a very short time. He would do everything in a very short time because he was empowered. It's described that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he was in this position of the high court judge, those of you from India, you know, the notorious, protracted, extended length of time any court action in India takes. Yes? Yes, Maharaj. Painfully long. He would complete a week's worth of what other judges would do in one day. While the lawyers were doing their argument, he was writing the decision. He was empowered because that means this. He could understand the circumstance very quickly because he was empowered to do so. And he would be writing the conclusion. So by the end of the day, he already had his decisions written. And people would get to the next morning. 1 week's worth, the next morning. And then he would go home and take his bath, spend time with his family, spend time reading the scriptures, take short rest, and get up after 2 hours and was writing again. Transcendental literature. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, before they had watches, like, you know, wrist watches, he kept a little stopwatch, a pocket watch. And he got a chain hanging from his vest. Sometimes you'll see a picture, he's wearing a vest. But you look closely, and you'll see over on this side a little chain going into a little vest pocket. And he was regulated like, you know, to the minute. In his biography, the description of, you know, 12 minutes he would spend doing this, 14 minutes he would spend doing that. And then, you know, at a certain, because he rose so early, he allowed time for a nap. But if he didn't need a nap, then he would use that for memorizing verses. And he was very regulated, like to the T, but not like compulsive, but just very regulated. Because he was very busy, and busy people know that you have to be regulated in order to accomplish all the things that you're obliged to do. 100 books. And the range of the books that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote ranged from Sanskrit writings to village literature, because he was very interested in the work of Lord Nityananda. Those of you that know where Bhaktivinoda Thakur is, Svananda Sukhada Kunj, where he kept his residence on the other side of Jalangi. When you visit Mayapur, to visit Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house, it's on the other side of the Jalangi. But when you visit his house, it's just down the street, I mean like 500 yards, from where Lord Nityananda made it his headquarters for expanding the Namahata. We use that term just to mean like a house program. But Namahata then specifically meant the marketplace of the holy name. Lord Chaitanya gave to Lord Nityananda the instruction to spread the love of God through the distribution of the holy name throughout all of Bengal. And he made his headquarters just down the street from where Bhaktivinoda Thakur made his Surabhi Kunj, it's called. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, knowing that village people were not literate, he decided how to teach them was through song, because Bengalis like songs. Everybody likes songs. Bengalis like songs too. And so he explained the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya through song. And then he would write the song, and then the village people would learn the song, and then they would learn the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya. Then he had a second approach, which was the question-answer format. Like, you know, question: who is Lord Chaitanya? Answer: Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself who has appeared as a devotee. Question: what's the difference between Krishna himself and an expansion of Krishna? Answer: like that, like really ABC. And then, you know, sections and sections and sections, and they put the sections together in a book, so that the village elder that could read, or the brahmana, he would train him through those literatures, and then they would explain those literatures to the other village people. The mentoring system to the village elder. And yet there were some large number, I can't remember the large number, many hundreds of such Namahata centers. So way down here in simple Bengali language, commentaries on the existing Vaishnava literature, commentaries on Bhagavad Gita, commentary on Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srimad, commentaries, his own literature, novels, that's novel, he explained brilliantly that classic literature in any culture is nothing but a re-explanation of scripture. They take, like he gives the example of Paradise Lost and Paradise Regained by John Milton, or the Iliad and the Odyssey of Homer. It's nothing but a retelling of classic religious teachings, scriptural teachings, in the current day's language, in a context that people can relate to, so they, you know, can appreciate it. But the message is nothing but a retelling of the message of the scripture according to time and circumstance. So he, explaining that principle, followed the same principle when he wrote, for example, Jiva Dharma. the Dharma of the Living Entity, Jiva Dharma. And it's a novel. And the storyline is, once upon a time, there were two college students in Calcutta. Modern scene, going to college. And, you know, they like to go see places, and they went to see places. And one time they heard about Navadvip, so they thought, hey, let's go see that place. It was just a curiosity thing. And when they got there, they found some mahants. They found some great saintly people. And they, you know, chapter by chapter, if you look at Jiva Dharma, I've looked at Jiva Dharma, it's nectar devotion, certain chapters of nectar devotion, nectar of instruction, and some other parts of Bhagavad Gita, chapter by chapter by chapter by chapter. It's retelling the scripture through a storyline. So these young boys go there, and, you know, they've got questions, and the sages answer the questions. They go through a whole session, and then they have kirtan. They go back and start talking about, hey, we heard this, what about that? And a novel, Jiva Dharma. And there's one little section where, you know, one of the young men, for those of you that are young men from India, you'll appreciate this part. They were starting to get really serious about the spiritual practice, and their parents started getting really worried. Uh-oh, they're getting really serious about spiritual practice. You better hurry up and get them married. And then, you know, but I don't want to hurry up and get married. So they went and asked the sadhu, and Navadvip, what should I do? My parents are thinking that I should get married, but I'm not so inclined. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in this particular writing, explained it's not a matter of simply will to become a renunciate. Actually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his teachings encouraged some persons to become sannyasis, but many persons, most persons, were in grahastha life, and the facilities of grahastha life were advancing in Krishna consciousness, and explained in detail. It's fascinating whether you're a sannyasi or grahastha, or deciding. It's fascinating to see how he... So anyway, Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote for everybody. He was a visionary. When at a time in India, when it's, you know, British rule, and not only British rule, but the intellectuals were looking to, like, follow Europe, because there was British rule time. So the intellectuals were thinking, ooh, on Vedic culture, ooh, bad. Europe, yay! Intellectualism is in Europe. So that was the temperament in India at the time, amongst intellectuals, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur was one of them. He went to school with the Tagore family. He was highly placed, elite individual in India at the time. While he's dealing with that stuff in India, he's thinking way beyond his time. In 1896, he wrote in English language a small book called Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, His Life and Precepts. It's a small 72-page, like, you know, like a BBT publication, what we call our small books, that kind of literature. And he printed it at his own expense and sent it to universities all over the world, thinking explicitly that at least scholarly people should know who is Lord Chaitanya. So he sent it to universities so that the scholars of those universities could have it. That was the same year that Srila Prabhupada was born, 1896. And when Srila Prabhupada came to the West, one of those books was found in McGill University in, it's either Toronto or Montreal. And they showed Srila Prabhupada the book. His authorities went to the library and found the book. And Prabhupada identified that was sent by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Such a visionary. He envisioned, and there was another one sent to a university in Southeast Asia. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't like India. It was the world should hear about Lord Chaitanya. At a time when he was obscure. But he had such fame and such vision. He had a vision that he wrote. The day will come when persons from all over the world, from America, from Australia, from Russia, from Africa, they'll all come together in Navadvip, singing and dancing on the streets of Navadvip, Jai Satchinandana, Jai Satchinandana, when there's nothing but rice paddies, and nobody knows about Lord Chaitanya. But that was his vision. On one morning walk, Srila Prabhupada in Mayapur was speaking about Bhaktivinoda Thakur with such enthusiasm. It was like Prabhupada was going to in a rocket ship and was going to take off. His whole body was with excitement, just vibrating, appreciating the magnanimous, the incredible position of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he was going on and on and on, more excited, more excited. One of the devotees said, Srila Prabhupada, he was such a visionary, why didn't he make the whole world Krishna conscious? And Prabhupada smiled and he said, you'll have something for us to do. And Jiva Goswami similarly was so prolific. I mean, in Sanskrit he composed, the number is 400,000 verses in Sanskrit. And just to give some idea of what is 400,000 verses in Sanskrit mean. How many verses are there in Bhagavad Gita?
700.
How many verses are there in Srimad Bhagavatam? 18,000. How many verses are there in Mahabharata? 100,000. So it's like he wrote 3 Mahabharatas, 7 or 8 Bhagavatams, 7 or 8 Bhagavad Gitas, and a bunch of other books in one lifetime, all in Sanskrit. And when you read Jiva Goswami's writings, it's very high. Very high. And just to give an example, some of you may have met, has he been here? Radhika Raman. You've met him?
Yeah.
He's spoken here?
Yeah.
Radhika Raman did his PhD at Oxford University on about 4 or 5 verses from one part of one of the 6 Sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami. And his PhD thesis was, you know, substantial. So to unpack those 4 or 5 verses was a PhD thesis. And the Sandarbhas are, I don't know the number of verses in the Sandarbhas, but a lot of verses. Of course, he made cross-references and so many other things, but, you know, what's in Jiva Goswami's writings is incredible. Maybe some of you have read Sri Brahma Samhita. It's printed by the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. It's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's translation, more or less, of Jiva Goswami's commentary on Sri Brahma Samhita. Read that Sri Brahma Samhita. Keep a dictionary with you. And your binoculars. What's he saying? Jiva Goswami was so incredible of a scholar. It was he who directly gave training to the next, during his time, his elder brothers, Rupa and Sanatan, uncles, Rupa and Sanatan, were the principal acharyas, the followers, amongst the followers of Lord Chaitanya, the immediate generation after. Jiva Goswami, their nephew, became the next acharya, self-effulgent acharya, very clearly understood by every follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the most preeminent personality no question. And he, in turn, trained the next three who became the principal personalities who gave Krishna consciousness to the whole world. And he, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, was a visionary. He wasn't just stay in Vrindavan and be happy. He stayed in Vrindavan and certainly was happy, but he wanted the world to receive the literature exactly as Bhaktivinoda Thakur did, or Bhaktivinoda Thakur did exactly as Jiva Goswami did, however you like to say it. Because Lord Chaitanya taught, the Goswamis wrote, Jiva Goswami instructed others what they wrote, and he kept a library. Fortunate for us, he kept a library. And he had many, many brahmanas engaged in copying the books of the Goswamis. Fortunate for us, because now we have the books of the Goswamis, because of Jiva Goswami's work. And then he put those books on a bullock cart and sent his three principal scholarly, highly evolved, learned students to go teach the other parts of India and these messages of Lord Chaitanya's teachings, not just they should stay in Vrindavan. The first Sankirtan party was sent out by Jiva Goswami. Very similar to Srila Prabhupada did. He received the teachings from Bhakti Siddhanta, he put them in a written form, he saw that they were published, and he sent us here and there, after teaching us in the basic understandings, present this to others. And we have the same mandate. The Bhaktivedanta Book Trust is Srila Prabhupada's, he called it his heart. Now what happens if the heart doesn't work properly? You're dead. That's what happens. Or you're at least in the hospital, if not dead. The Bhaktivedanta Book Trust is, he said, it's like the heart. And it needs to have blood flowing through it. And that blood flowing through it is our distribution of this literature and the receiving of funds so that more books can be distributed. And it gives life to the to ISKCON, to the society of devotees. Not just that we distribute the books and don't read them, or not just that we read them and don't distribute them. Both activities must be going on simultaneously. We had a wonderful opportunity this weekend for hearing. Wonderful brahmacharis came here and gave a wonderful presentation of Krishna conscious understandings from Prabhupada's books. This other part is a very, very vital part. In honor of Jiva Goswami's appearance day and anticipating tomorrow Bhaktivinoda Thakur's appearance or disappearance day, I don't know which one it is. Which one is it? Appearance day. Consider their desire not just to become Krishna conscious and read many books, but see that the world has this literature also. At least, the world around you. This northern New Jersey part of the world around you. And it's not, for somebody else to do it. It's for Ramchandra to do it because he's the book distribution guy. It's for all of us to do. It's our life. It's part of our mission to see that Srila Prabhupada's books, by one means or another means or another means, receive and give. It's the essence of what loving dealing is, loving exchange, receive and give. So, now back to our quiz question. Nitya Siddha, Sadhana Siddha, now what's a category of an example of Kripa Siddha? Kripa Siddha. Hint. It's in relation to the Vamana story. Hint. Bali Maharaj. Who was Bali Maharaj? Prahlad Maharaj's grandson. Who was Prahlad Maharaj's father? Hiranyakashipu. And Hiranyakashipu had as his parents Kashyapa and Diti. So the descendants of Hiranyakashipu were called Daityas. There's the Devas and the Daityas. And there's this clash, like the Suras and Asuras. So those who have Hiranyakashipu-like disposition, that is, ooh, Vishnu. He didn't like Vishnu. And that's the disposition of a Daitya. But the son of Hiranyakashipu was Prahlad Maharaj. And it was Vishnu. And Prahlad Maharaj's son was Virocha, and Virocha's son was Bali Maharaj. So he had this, he had a disposition like his grandfather. In fact, specifically, Srila Prabhupada writes, it's not in the verse by Shukadeva Goswami speaking it, but Prabhupada writes, he's an example of Kripasiddha. He received mercy from his grandfather through the instructions of his grandfather, just as Prabhupada as a small boy was instructing his classmates in school about the teachings of devotion to the Supreme Lord Vishnu. He was teaching Vishnu Bhakti in school. He certainly taught it to his grandson. And those teachings that Bali Maharaj received from his grandfather fructified. He not only became a Vishnu Bhakta, but he was on the topmost platform of Vishnu Bhakti, which was pretty incredible because he's in the dynasty of the Daityas. And he had some loyalty to the Daityas. It's one of these enigmatic situations, difficult to understand situations, where an elevated person expresses, their verses were expressed, you know, I'm a member of this dynasty, so I'm duty bound to fulfill the orders of this dynasty. So in that duty of the Daityas, as the king of the Daityas, with great prowess and military strength, they attacked the Devas, and they defeated them. It was a huge battle. And the demigods were defeated. And the demigods lost their kingdom. In the course of the demigods losing their kingdom, there's a detail we were discussing earlier today. Bali Maharaj was seriously injured during the battle, but Shukracharya had special mantras, so he revived him. But Diti was very concerned for the safety of her son. And Aditi was very concerned about Indra losing his kingdom. So when the demigods, part of their qualification is, a great part of their qualification is their devotees. They're mixed devotees, but they're devotees. And so when they have a difficulty, they especially, with great intent, they pray to Lord Vishnu for protection. And he extends protection because they're very sincere in their shelter-taking and the responsible service that they're accepting. So they went to Lord Vishnu and prayed to Lord Vishnu for his protection. What time do we have to end? What's the cutoff time? 7:30. Okay. I'll do a fast forward. Lord Vishnu agreed to appear. Don't worry, I'll soon make my appearance. It's something he has said many times before. He made his appearance as the one of the children of Kashyapa and Aditi. So he appeared as the younger brother of Indra. When he appeared as the son of Kashyapa and Aditi, very much like the description that we find of Krishna's appearance in the prison house of Kamsa, he appeared in his full Narayan form, forearms, blackish in complexion, beautifully decorated. You know, what child appears like that? Helmet, you know, symbols of Vishnu, beautiful garland down to his knees, very fragrant garland at that, and jewels, shark-like earrings on his ears, and armlets, and bangles, and the full opulence, Aishwarya of Narayan. And right before them, he transformed himself into a small child. The very name Vamana means dwarf or midget. Like we've seen midgets or short, very short persons. Very short, but beautiful and effulgent. So they understood, like Vasudeva and Devaki understood, this isn't just our son. This is the personality of Godhead who's appeared as our son. Because Kasyapa, it was a great Brahmana. Vamana was also accepted as a Brahmana. And he was given Brahminical initiation, or his Gayatri initiation is described in the Bhagavatam, where different sages and demigods and different personalities came and offered him his white umbrella, his deerskin upper garment, his sacred thread, his simple cloth, his water pot, his Rudraksha beads. He had his hands full of stuff, things that people had given him. And at that particular ceremony of his Brahminical initiation, he was called upon to perform a yajna, and he performed the yajna with all the proper mantras and greatly honored by everyone. It said thousands of flowers were showered upon him at that time by all the devas. They understood him to be the personality of Godhead also. And some distant place, Bali Maharaj was performing an Ashvamedha Yajna under the direction of Shukracharya, and he invited all the great sages to come and bless the occasion, because just like when you have a function of whatever it is, you'd like to invite the brahmanas to come, and you'd like to invite the sannyasis to come, and you'd like to invite the sadhus to come, not just for social, you know, prestige, but it helps to sanctify the occasion by their presence. The successfulness of the yajna or the festival or the event becomes established even more so by their presence. So as they're preparing for the beginning of the yajna, off in the distance, down the road, comes like a second sun rising on the horizon, and everyone's amazed. It's already morning. The sun has already risen. Here comes a second sun rising. But it's not rising. It's coming. It's a personality, an effulgent personality coming down the road. Everyone's attention was absorbed. As he became closer, this little midget boy, young boy, but also midget in size, dwarf, Vamana. Beautiful, radiant, smiling, very happy, and everyone became so joyful. Even before there was any exchange with Vamana, Bali Maharaj decided, I want to give whatever he wants. It was in his heart, because he's a great devotee. He wanted to give in charity to whoever this person is. Very quickly, he received him, He offered him all respect. He wanted to offer, so he offered whatever charity you would like. Jewels, gold, my kingdom, whatever you would like. It's yours, just name it. Here's a blank check, fill in the numbers. We're trying to build a temple, here's a blank check, fill in the numbers. Not one of those, but... I said, no. I'm a Brahmin, I don't have many needs. I don't need many cows, and I don't need big palace, and I don't have all these needs. Just 3 paces of land. While he's looking at his legs, and 3 paces of land, your legs are so short. How much land is that? Anyhow, certainly, whatever you like. I've already said, whatever you wish is yours, that's what you wish, that's yours. Shukracharya said, no, don't do it. Oh, you made a big mistake. Because this is not just a brahmana. This is Lord Vishnu. A brahmana is honest. Lord Vishnu is a cheater. He's appeared like this. He's the enemy of the daityas, and he's appeared in a disguise as a brahmana, and he just wants to take everything from you. And how can your life be fulfilled if you don't have anything? The duty of a householder is to perform sacrifice. And how can you perform a sacrifice without having qualified brahmana? And when you have a qualified brahmana, you have to give dakshin. I'm the qualified brahmana, Shukracharya. And you have to have dakshin. You have to give the brahmana some dakshin. And you won't have anything. You can't perform the yagya. You can't give dakshin to the brahmana. I'll be without a job. So this is no good if you can't do this. I've got a plan. Although you said he can have the land, you didn't say om first. When you don't say om first, you can take it back. When you're giving charity, it's okay. It's in the rule book. It's okay. So take it back. Don't give him the charity. Bali said, you cited a principle that's true. But there are other principles that are also true. Here's one of them. I'm a king. I've given my word. I can't break my word. Here's another one. I'm a brahmana. Excuse me. I've given a promise to a brahmana. I can't go against a promise to a brahmana. And here's a third. You say he's Lord Vishnu. The scriptures say, surrender thanks to Lord Vishnu. And you're telling me don't surrender thanks to Lord Vishnu. It's against the scripture. I have to. Then he gave, I'll just end with this. He said, in this world, there are many kings that have died heroically on the battlefield. And dying heroically in religious war, they go to heaven. But everything is taken from them. So if one in their life can, before everything is taken from them in battle, give everything to a qualified brahmana, just see, he's effulgent. One's life is made perfect. If that means I'm bereft of everything, I'm going to be bereft of everything at some point anyway. Why not give it to a qualified brahmana? And if he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all the better. I have to go against your instruction. Every person, let me just read what he says. Can't find it. There's a statement that says that each person in the course of their life should do something by which they are remembered. That in the course of, for any of us, whatever it is that we do, whoever we are, in 50 years from now or 100 years from now, who's going to even think of our existence? We're so absorbed in what's important to us. But what's enduring? He's giving this argument. Even a great warrior. But one who, in the course of this life, does a great act, there's so much merit, their fame lives beyond their life. Their good merit endures beyond their life. So I now have this opportunity, and you're saying don't do it. I have to disobey. It's scripturally the right thing to do. So Shukracharya became very angry and cursed him. You will be bereft. You will become bereft of all of your possessions, and you'll have to reside in hell. At the end of the Leela, Vamana gives him a kingdom in Suttala and says, I'll become his doorkeeper. Things that he's given to me, I now will give to Indra, at least the heavenly portion, but the other portion, let him rule there. He's the Daitya king, let him rule in the Daitya region, but I'll become his doorkeeper. I'll stand at the gate and protect. He's a Brahmana. But it's described in our Vaishnav literature, not sure which of the Vaishnav literatures, that when Ravana came to conquer all lands, he also went to Suttala. He heard about the prowess of Bali Maharaj. So he wanted to combat with Bali Maharaj. You know what happened? Vamana used the same foot that he used to cover the upper planetary systems and then throughout beyond the universe, pierce the covering universe. He kicked Ravana, who went flying and left Suttala. Bali was protected by the foot of Vamana. He kept his word. And the Supreme Lord, who gives his word to give protection to those who surrender to him, make sacrifice unto him, his protection is guaranteed, and it's not just empty words. He gives his protection to his surrendered devotees. So those are some thoughts on Bhaktivinoda Thakur for tomorrow. Jiva Goswami and Vamana and his appearance day today. And time to end. Thank you very much. You're very patient. Hare Krishna. So, somebody makes announcements, or what happens next? Any questions? No questions. You have a question? Okay.
Give her the microphone. Narada Muni?
Nitya
Siddha or Sadhana Siddha? What's your understanding?
Because I think in his previous life, right, he was Sadhana.
That's correct. And he followed a sadhana given to him by the Bhakti Vedantas. So what does that mean? Sadhana Siddha.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Thank you. Anyone else? Question? Okay.